Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. Elaine Pinkerton, author, educator, award-winning blogger, holds MA degrees in literature from the University of Virginia and from St. John's College in Santa Fe, New Mexico. A freelance journalist for several decades, published in Runner's World, Family Circle, New Mexico Magazine, and Tumbleweed's Family Magazine, the author of fiction and nonfiction books. Her published works include the book The Goodbye Baby, a diary about adoption. Her story of a lifetime of keeping a diary combined with a desire to face the issues of growing up as an adoptee. Her newest title, The Hand of Ganesh, is set in her home state of New Mexico and India, a country she studied and visited throughout her adult life, a novel about adoption, women's friendship, and journey of discovery. The book has been described as equal parts self-actualization, travelogue, and mystery adventure story. The Hand of Ganesh dives deep into several American protagonists' curiosity about India. And Elaine Pinkerton, author of The Hand of Ganesh, is our guest on This Week in America. Elaine, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here.
I love the book, The Hand of Ganesh, receiving rave reviews. What was the inspiration behind this? How did this story begin for The Hand of Ganesh?
I'll have to go back to my earliest impressions of India. My dad, my late father, had served in Calcutta, a clinical psychologist in charge of a neuropsychiatric ward. After World War II, he had planned to go back, but instead he went on with his academic career. But he had students from India and their beautiful, billowing, colorful saris when he had gatherings at our home. And he also had ivory artifacts from elephant tusks. And of course, those are extinct now. Our ivory artists. I grew up with a fascination of India, about India. I went there several times, and what really triggered the Hand of Ganesh was a visit to southern India, Mahabalipuram, a shore temple, and the sea had washed up so much, a tsunami, uncovered the bottom of the ocean, actually, and there was an ancient town or temple, a whole network of edifices. And I thought, well, what if a hand of a god had washed up? There's a whole story behind why it's Ganesh too, but it was triggered by my love, my fascination with India, and also the fact that I was adopted when I was 5. So those two themes came together for The Hand of Ganesh.
The book is available, by the way, at Amazon, the usual places. Elaine's website is elainepinkerton.woodpress.com, and we'll have that on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. You can link on, get information on this and other books that Elaine has written. This, I believe, is the third novel, The Hand of Ganesh and the other two. Is there a connection between the three novels?
Indeed, there is. But Rick, I'd like to mention my wonderful publisher, Pokal Press, located in Punxsutawney, Pennsylvania. Without them, none of these books that I'm about to talk about would have become a reality. Pokal Press, at any rate, and they have a website. The first book, Beast of Bengal, came directly from my father's experience. It's a fictitious military hospital. And there's a corrupt hospital commander who is the real beast in the book. He has slithered into addiction. He, Mac McDermott, a character my readers love to hate because he's despicable, but there's a reason he had an abused childhood. He is an empty uniform in charge of the military psychiatric ward. So Richard Binet, who is my father, thinly disguised, is the hero. He has to save the hospital from the Gundas. The Indian population wants the 142nd hospital back. They want the Brits to quit India. They want the Americans to quit India. This is toward the end of World War II. And Richard Binet has to face a man-eating tiger, but I can't reveal how. You have to read Beast of Bengal to find out.
And we're going to talk about that on an upcoming program, and I'm looking forward to that, and we don't want to give too much away, but tune in to the next program. Not that you'll give any more away during that program, but we'll go more into depth into the book and the background of that. So that's one of the novels. Talk about the next one.
The next one is All the Wrong Places, which is autobiographical. Clara Jordan, a first-year teacher, has gone to leave the classroom to get video equipment. This is in the 80s. It's not the way it is now. She's gone to get the VCR. And Joseph Speckledhorse is going to be a guest speaker to her ninth grade students. When she comes back, she can't open the door. And there is Joseph Speckledhorse, but he's dead on the classroom floor. The novel spins out from that. Turns out that he has been improving the school by selling off legacy pottery, beautiful, beautiful, valuable pottery from different pueblos in the eight northern pueblos, and it gets him murdered. The murderer may or may not be her boyfriend, who is a duplicitous character, Henry DeMarco. He is the IT director of the school, but he's really a pottery peddler of pottery, illegal pottery. This gets Clara in really hot water. Not only does she keep her students engaged and keeps them afloat because they're totally shattered by this death.
Yes.
She keeps them going, but she also ends up running for her life. Again, I don't want to reveal the details of that, but it's very suspenseful, I've been told, and it introduces Clara Jordan, the protagonist. So that's the second novel.
And that's interesting because these books are such great reads. All of the reviews are glowing, and you'll want to get all three. And you can get information, of course, Amazon, by going to Elaine's profile on Amazon. Her website, elainepinkerton.woodpress.com. And we'll have that on our website.
That's WordPress.
WordPress.com. And we've got that. It'll be on the website. I'll go through this again at the end of the program. You mentioned Clara and Dottie. We mentioned Clara. Let's talk about the real protagonist in Hand of Ganesh. Is it Clara or is it Dottie?
I don't know which one is the real protagonist. Aaron Dottie is the one who helps them, enables them to go to India. Clara, perhaps, is the protagonist. They're really co-protagonists. Erin Dottie is at loose ends. She's in Santa Fe, New Mexico at St. John's College. She needs a year off. Clara, because of the disaster at the Indian school, is at loose ends as well. They form a very close friendship. Each one becomes for the other. Clara is also an adult adoptee. Well, they're 20 and 27, Clara being the older of the two friends. And they come up with this plan to go to India, which is a life-changing experience. Erin Dottie, when the two are in the Kumbh Mela, which is a Hindu pilgrimage, Erin Dottie falls into the Ganges, sort of accidentally on purpose, because she suspects that she's Hindu, as you know, that as an infant, and she knows nothing about her background. She falls into the Ganges, but the Hindu belief is that dipping into the Ganges is the key to rising above one's station in life, that and good deeds throughout life, and that in the next life, the person who has dunked, shall I say,
yes,
has a better chance. Well, first of all the sins of the past are forgiven, and it's like a fresh start, and one can be born in a higher caste if the pilgrimage is successful and one has dipped into the Ganges. I've seen videos of this Kumbh Mela. Mela means festival. Kumbh, K-U-M-B-H-A. It's the biggest festival in the world, and it's quite ancient. And any Hindu wants to do that. Every Hindu At least that's the impression.
Yes.
I haven't been in it myself, in the Kumbh Mela. I've never had the opportunity, but I visited it in my imagination and lots and lots and lots of research.
You know, it's interesting because India sort of comes alive in this book, doesn't it? I mean, you've got these great characters, these fully developed characters that we get tied into. We really have an interest in them. And then you've got this great backstory in India. You mentioned the research. What was it like making sure that you were accurate in reflecting India and the customs?
It was possible to go to site after site after site, to go into cities, because the two women don't immediately go to the Kumbh Mela there. They wander about with a vague sense of purpose. We've got to find Dottie's birth mother somehow or some connection. There are websites galore. Now, they are in Hindi or Urdu, so that wasn't too helpful. But one of the scenes in the book takes place at the historic ponds, pictures of each and every pond surrounded by beautiful columns and gardens. It's possible to go places all over the world, as most people know who've spent time on the internet, but India seems particularly detailed. And reading, I read lots and lots of books, and talking with people. So I had done a lot of research for
yes.
Beast of Bengal. I discovered, going back to my first novel, a website titled Calcutta 1940s. And to my amazement, someone in Scotland, How Could We Be was his name, wanted to help me. He knew that the book was set in Calcutta in the 40s, and he told me names of streets and the kind of music
wow.
that younger people would be listening to, which was American jazz. So because of the internet, I was able to do a lot of research and reading.
Fascinating what goes into the books and the whole series available, of course, at Amazon, the usual places. The book we're talking about specifically, The Hand of Ganesh, with Elaine Pinkerton, the author. What does the hand symbolize?
The hand, which is a fragment. It's not like the hand on the cover. It's a stone fragment. And the hand it stands for fate. Ganesh, the Hindu god, is overcomer of obstacles. And I've discovered that many people love Ganesh. Ganesha is often called. The hand is the guiding force in the book that brings the characters together. They, Clara and Aaron Dottie, known as Dottie, don't discover the hand until Dottie's Aunt Miriam passes away and leaves her, Aaron Dottie, the entire house and the contents. They don't have to go through the whole contents, but they do go through the attic with all this memorabilia, and the hand itself is there, and they find it and pick it up, and they read a novel that Aunt Miriam started, and realize that this came from India. It came from the ocean, and they need to return it. So the hand is fate, I think.
The book is The Hand of Ganesh. Elaine Pinkerton is our guest on the program. Book available at the usual places, Amazon. You'll find information there on the other books, as well as Elaine's website. That's elainepinkerton.wordpress.com, and all that on our website. Go back and talk a little bit again about this fascination, this love that you had of India. You talk about being there, your father. This has sort of been lifelong for you, hasn't it, this fascination, this love of India?
It has indeed. I had the good fortune to live in Iran years ago. It was 50 years ago, to tell the truth. And we went to India, my husband and I, and it was like going to another world. It's otherworldly. It's kaleidoscopic. It's overwhelming. It's an assault on the senses. And it seems to me that people either think, wow, didn't even know this existed, and they fall in love with it in a way, or they're so repelled, like, whew, I'm never going there again. I was one of the former. And so I was able to go with overseas adventure travel some years later, and then for The Hand of Ganesh itself, I was already intrigued by the tsunami that uncovered the ocean and the ancient city at the bottom of the ocean and the whole idea. So I went to Tamil Nadu in the southern tip of the subcontinent and visited Mahabalipuram.
Oh, fascinating. So a little research on the road there. That's a nice a little trip and going back to a place that you hold dear. Will you be writing more books set in India? It sounds like this really is something that's a part of you. Any more books set in India?
It's such a good question, Rick. But and I have another book brewing, and my mind is like a crock pot. There. And I've been writing different pieces about it. Clara is going somewhere. Arundhati becomes happily married, but I don't want to say too much about that. You have to read the book to find out about
okay,
that.
Okay.
But Clara is going somewhere, but I don't believe it will be India. She, Clara, becomes intrigued by the Shroud of Turin. And I have some background with that because of my late husband's affiliation with studying the Shroud of Turin. I became quite fascinated with it. So Clara's going somewhere, but it won't be India. It will be Rome. I do know that much. So I'll have to perhaps schedule another trip to Rome.
I was just going to say, if the travel agent's listing, go ahead. You're going to get a call from Elaine very shortly to schedule another research trip to do some research for her new book. You've written a number of nonfiction books as well. Do you prefer fiction or nonfiction, or do you enjoy both?
I actually enjoy both very much. And the kind of books I've been writing, especially The Hand of Ganesh, they involve nonfiction in the realm of research. As far as writing novels, that's always been my dream. So here I am at my stage in life, realizing my dream, and it's immensely rewarding and pretty exciting when a friend says, "Oh, I missed the book when I finished it," or, you know,
oh, yes.
It's just like your child doing well in first grade. Like, he knows how to spell. How did he do that?
Well, the books are receiving excellent reviews. And again, you'll find all of those on Elaine's website. And I'll give you all that as we go through the interview here today. You've got a background as a technical writer, doing some work with Los Alamos National Laboratory, some technical writing there as well. Talk about making that transition from a technical writer to writing fiction.
Okay, it wasn't a direct transition. After my late second husband and I wanted to travel, and a lot of that travel was to Paris and Rome for International Shroud of Turin meetings, I realized that what I wanted to get back to, because I'd had a number of successful nonfiction books, was fiction. I'd had short stories published, but never a novel. And that was my true ambition. The technical writing part was good because it was such a wonderful discipline. I basically didn't like it very much, but it was an excellent discipline. And I learned a lot from it. And I got to interview Edward Teller, the creator of the hydrogen bomb. Not about science, but about his love of music. And he played the Moonlight Sonata there at the cafeteria at Los Alamos National Laboratory and recorded it. I had a radio program, Los Alamos, then and now. So, but I also had the unexciting projects like the oil shale report, in which I had to check subject-verb agreement and ask the scientist to find a metaphor. Is it like baking bread? Or what can you say about radial keratotomy to translate technical language for the layman? So these research and development articles could make some sense to somebody who wasn't a scientist. So in a way, I was a translator. And it was a very good discipline. Plus, I met fascinating people.
I was going to say, just the foundation of what you learned there and how to take something and make it relatable to the average person. And then meeting the people that you did had to be a, a fringe benefit of the job that stays with you today, all the memories of meeting these people.
It absolutely does. And I have a big, huge notebook of interviews I did. It was on when we used to have print publications. Now everything's virtual. Scientists, their personal stories about what they did when they weren't developing bombs. One was building a ship, and he and his wife, Bonnie, were going to sail around the world. He was actually building a ship. He had that brilliant a mind. Wow. And there was an Ethiopian scientist who had a lot to say about the origins of man, and he would go to Africa and study this. Then the Bonnie Bedlam Quartet, brilliant musicians with wonderful songs giving. So the scientists there were a different breed in a way. They, not all of them, some of them were just kind of nerdy and didn't do fascinating things.
Yes.
But I gained quite a deal, a lot of respect for scientists. Both my sons, by the way, are in the scientific field.
It's interesting. Such a fascinating background. Our guest on the program is Elaine Pinkerton. The book we were talking about specifically, we'll come back to it, The Hand of Ganesh. So many books that she's written, you'll find it all on her website, elainepinkerton.wordpress.com. Time going by so quickly, a few minutes left in the program. You mentioned something before about your mind is very active, all of these story ideas coming up. Talk about your writing habits. How do you refine those ideas, go through, sort of prioritize, and then follow through with writing some of these books?
I try to carve out space. I have found that events like to rob me of time, so I've tried to pare things down and actually write it on my calendar, times when I'm going to plan the next book. Right now I'm in the promotional phase of writing, which is a whole different thing. But
yes,
it must be done. Things are only new for a very short time.
Exactly.
And I must mention my nonfiction book, From Calcutta with Love, which is being reissued by Pajarito Press, World War II letters that this dad that I began the talk with, his letters are now at a Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, and they're love letters to my mother, but they're very, very descriptive. They are a type of travelogue, and they're brilliant. And I'm giving a reading soon with music at either end of the reading at a gallery on Canyon Road. So that kind of thing doesn't allow a lot of time for creative planning. But the best thing to do is to clear the calendar, I would advise people. Write it in your day diary or however you keep track of your time. And then the ideas will come. But it doesn't just happen magically with the muse suddenly perching on one's shoulder and, oh, I'm inspired now.
Exactly. And you know, so many people, when you listen to them, it's like, well, I just never have those ideas. And I think that's what they're waiting for, is for somebody to whisper in their ear. And like you say, it just doesn't happen like that. You have to have the atmosphere has to be right. You have to set aside the time. And boy, just a couple minutes left in the program. I want to talk about the monthly blog. Talk about that. This is award-winning, awarded top 100 adoption blogs, the top-ranked adoption blog at rankedblogs.com. You're really touching a lot of people's lives with the blog. Talk about that.
Well, it's a good discipline. I don't always feel greatly inspired. When the blog started out, it was a lot about adoption, and now it mentions adoption. But I like the fact that when Sunday evening rolls around and there's a hashtag Monday blogs, and that sends it out to far more people. Since I have a deadline, a self-imposed deadline, new ideas pop up because of the deadline. Not one that anybody else has, but I have it.
Yes.
So I write about a number of things, gardening or what I'm doing or overcoming, like dueling with demons, the demons of being adopted. You weren't good enough to be kept, or these demons just recur. And I'm in some adoption forums, and it's just something that never leaves one, this lack of a family tree. And it's not very troubling to me now because I ended up in being adopted by wonderful parents, but there are a lot of questions. So that The overriding theme is adoption, but now I write about many topics. I'm remodeling my backyard, and I wrote about having a century plant removed because it had finally died. But underneath the century plant was a new century plant that I named Junior. My garden helper and I created a pond made of rocks. I'm here in the arid Southwest, yes. So we don't plant new things so much. We just have to rockscape. We're really suffering from drought.
And it's not getting any better, is it? I'm hearing the word catastrophic now thrown around more when you're talking about the climate in the southwestern part of the country.
It's devastating. It might be part of the pendulum swinging, but it's not a good thing. So we have to be very aware of the preciousness of water because water is life. There's a saying in Spanish, but my Spanish isn't good enough to say it. Es la vida. Agua es la vida. I said it, but not with the proper accent.
Well, it's good enough for me. I understand what you're saying with that. And I take a minute here because we got to wrap things up. But what's it like having the blog? I mean, this is a project you can sit down and write about anything you want to. And it doesn't have to be a couple of trips overseas and 6 months of sitting at the computer trying to come up with a storyline. That freedom has to be really fulfilling, that you can just pleasurable. You can just sit and write about whatever you want to write about.
You're absolutely right. And I try to find something of value to share with my readers, not just, I bake cookies and they turned out good. It's a very good discipline, and it makes me look at my life a little differently. I'm not traveling a lot now. I may have to go to Rome for the new novel, or I may just go in my imagination. But here in Santa Fe, we have an international folk art market, which attracts 16,000 visitors, and I'm going to that. They're having a night market for the first time, and I will blog about that, adopting the world, or having it all come to Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Oh, yes.
Pretty amazing event.
Now, they can follow the blog on your website as well?
Yes, indeed. I have a little thing on the left-hand side that they can click and get it every time I publish one, which is monthly, or sometimes bi-monthly. And I love getting new subscribers. And you can also contact me through the blog.
And you can get information on Elaine's books there as well. So it's sort of a one-stop shop to get information on Elaine, and you can communicate with her as well. It's very simple. Elaine Pinkerton, that's P-I-N-K-E-R-T-O-N .wordpress.com. And we've got this on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Her book's available, of course, at Amazon, all of the usual places. It has been a pleasure, Elaine, having you on the program. Thank you so much for the time to talk about The Hand of Ganesh. We'll have you back in a few weeks to talk about one of the other fiction books that you've written, and I'm looking forward to that as well. Thank you for being with us on the program.
My pleasure. This has really been fun. Thank you, Rick.
It has been our pleasure, and it'll be fun having you back. So much more to talk about. Elaine Pinkerton, the book today, specifically The Hand of Ganesh. You'll find it at Amazon, the usual places. Information on our website and a direct link, our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.